Alrighty, McLaurin, we're here with Nick and Pastor Peter. We're doing Alrighty Then, our midweek broadcast where we look at back at the week sermon and kind of press it into our lives. Maybe I'll just start off and ask Nick here, like, what impressed you about this week's sermon? And it was on chapter 27 of Genesis.
I think in some ways it's a continuation of really what we've been talking about since Jacob kind of hit the scene, or even since Isaac hit the scene with his whole wanting to be rich and wanting to be blessed, and then yet when he was blessed and rich, he got kicked out of the land because maybe what he actually wanted wasn't benefiting him. And then we see Jacob and Esau on the scene, and one really wanting the will of God, or wanting God in kind of this weird, corrupt way, that being Jacob. And me and Peter talked about how I think that Jacob is a lot like Loki and how Esau is a lot like Thor. We have a guy like Esau who doesn't want God. And so what I was really just, the one thing that impressed me, and I think it was a big part of your big idea, was this idea that you can't bless what God hasn't blessed, and you can't unbless what God has blessed. And I really want to dialogue today about that idea of the will of God, and how do we seek the will of God, and really what is our perception of God, and do we try and force God's hand? Because that really is this whole case here, this story, I think, that you mentioned, that is this idea that Jacob and his mom are trying to force the hand of God.
And so is Isaac and Esau, right? Like this story, just to recap for our listeners, is really the story, we call it Jacob stealing the blessing. But really, when you look at the whole story, everyone is vying for this blessing. No one's talking to God. They know that this is God's blessing, but everybody kind of wants their hands on it and dictate the terms of the blessing. And they kind of want the blessing their way. Like Esau and Isaac, their dad kicks this thing off and says, you know, I want to bless you, and this is how it's going to happen. And then, of course, Rebecca, not to be outdone by Isaac, tells Jacob, like, okay, you know, this is what's happening between Isaac and your brother. We need to intercept here, and we need to kind of step into this and make it our blessing, make it your blessing. And of course, that's what Jacob does. And all of it actually leaves the family fractured. And at the end of it, I like what you're reflecting, this idea that this is the family that God blesses. It's mind-boggling to think that none of these folks are worthy. It's actually God that chooses this family to bless the world through. And we can get all caught up in kind of like who's better, who's not, and trying to kind of dissect and explain the story. I don't think we're ever called to explain the story other than God enters and blesses this family. And then it really then kind of, then the question really we have is how does God want to come into our lives and bless us? Because we can't force God's hand. Rather, it's more to know God's blessing and put ourselves under that.
And in a lot of ways, it feels like we're sometimes we stand in a room and we say, God bless here, and yet, you know, he's blessing somewhere else. Maybe we should just go to that room where he's already blessing. It's like trying to be in the bathroom and the shower's on, and you're standing in the opposite end of the bathroom saying, well, there's no water over here. Well, maybe you should go where the water is, and instead of always expecting God to bless what you desire, maybe you get to know God's heart and then go where he is blessing. And I read this whole chapter and this whole really book of Genesis is like one part Jerry Seinfeld and one part Jerry Springer.
I know.
Because it's a little bit of it's funny and a little bit of it's just kind of ridiculous. It's got this sort of reality TV show overlay with this kind of like Jersey Shore feel, where like this is crazy, the drama that's going on in this house. You have someone like Esau and Isaac, something that I didn't realize until you had mentioned it on Sunday was this idea that Isaac should have been doing this publicly.
Yes.
And he was kind of like, this whole thing had happened prior with the selling the birthright for the stew, and then we still see Isaac trying to kind of himself deceive his son, Jacob, who at this point kind of deserves this because it had been sold. And so I didn't even think about that, that there's deception on Isaac's part and certainly on Rebecca's part.
And one of the things that I only touched on in the sermon, and maybe I'll kind of unpack a little bit right here, is that this whole chapter is kind of bookended with, Esau marrying Canaanite women, and that grieved Isaac. And I mentioned it during Sunday, right? This is not a race thing, or, you know, when we first look at it, it almost sounds like an Old Testament legalistic thing, I was going to say. It's actually more of a compatibility holiness thing. God is calling these people to be a holy people, calling these people to be God's people. And there's Esau kind of like, I don't really care about that. I'm just going over here and I'm going to be what I want to be. And that grieved Isaac. And then the end of the chapter, starting in chapter 28, it says, then Esau hears about this and he actually then tries to marry within the family. And it's just messed up. This guy does not really care about God's blessing. And in spite or despite that, Isaac is willing to pass the family fortunes, pass the family honor, pass the family blessing, God's blessing, onto this guy that doesn't really care. And like we said, he's doing it secretively. Like Abraham blesses Isaac in a public way. You're going to see Jacob later bless all 12 of his sons. He calls them all together and says, this is what's going to go down. Whereas here, Isaac's like, I know, I kind of get the sense he knows it's deception. I think maybe that's why he felt the urgency to bless Jacob when he was being deceived. He was like, maybe this is not my son Esau. He's already kind of doubting that, but I think he knows he's on the time clock. He's under pressure to kind of do this fast, quick, so that it's done. And so, yeah.
And it's just interesting how it doesn't seem that anything in the Bible or in our lives is good when it's done in secret.
Yes.
Because I feel like if it has to be done in secret, there's a shame element to
yes.
it, right? And I think that's a big thing. And the difference between guilt and shame is this: is that guilt is when you feel bad about something that you've done, and shame is when you feel bad about who you are. And I think there's a little bit of both here. I think that Esau perhaps feels guilty about what he did with selling his birthright, and Isaac's a little bit shameful about who his son has become.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's the idea of, you know, selling your, you know, handing your business over to your kid who doesn't even know anything about the business because he doesn't care enough to learn. Or it's the idea of unequally yoked would be the New Testament version of this, where, you know, if this is your identity and your lifeblood and you're a Christian and you've said that this is going to be everything that you are and that Christ is going to be everything that you are, that's why the Bible is like, you know what, maybe in the New Testament it says maybe you shouldn't be marrying someone that doesn't have the same philosophy and belief system that is supposed to be your center. So now we have this guy, Esau, who his center is not God. His foundation is not God. So as strong as he is, he's really building his house on sandy shores.
Without a doubt. And, you know, we mentioned that Esau is as deceptive as Jacob. He's just not as good at it, right? Because, you know, he's vying for a blessing that he already sold. And now he's crying that he, you know, Jacob deceived him. But, you know, when we read two chapters ago when he sells his birthright, there, you know, yes, Jacob was wicked to even suggest that. But Esau was stupid to actually agree to it.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting here, God, this isn't a new idea. Like, Jacob didn't come up with a new idea. Esau, Isaac, Rebecca, none of them are original. God said, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
I'm going to give this to Jacob. And again, we have, just like with, I was just reading earlier in Genesis today, back with Hagar. It seems that we kind of get to this point where there's these people forcing the hand of God. And I think that's what I want to talk about specifically today is how do you think Peter, and I can answer this too, the modern church, modern Christian, perceives Christ and Christ's will and how to achieve the will of God?
What we're probably going to be talking about is kind of what Paul says, you know, the cross or Jesus is foolishness to the Greek and a stumbling block to the Jews, right? Because Jesus comes and he is this king, this Lord, and he doesn't look at all like the Lord or the Messiah that they were wanting, right? They wanted some sort of military king that would kind of storm Rome and restore the kingdom of Israel, and then they would be the top dog again. And the Greeks were looking for some sort of like Zeus-like character, right? Like that God-like character. And here Jesus dies on a cross. What is that, right? And so, you fast forward 2,000 years. I think we still do that. We still put expectations on Jesus that Jesus never says he'll do. One of them, and we've been talking a lot about this, is that he never promised us wealth or prosperity. You know, and when I say wealth and prosperity, kind of the prosperity gospel is that if you accept God, he'll make your life really good, right? Like there'll be no troubles. And every Christian knows, and every person knows, we still live in a broken world. And if anything, God, you know, nobody, now let me laugh at this. When Jesus says, in this world, there will be what? Trouble. He didn't say, in this world, you're going to have like a fantastic time. It'll be great. But no one names and claims that verse, right? Like nobody says, there's like, today you'll have trouble. Name it and claim it, buddy. Name it and claim it. But yet, there are all sorts of things that we want somehow Jesus to fulfill in our lives.
And I think this even goes further than that, because I think we think, well, at least I'll be fully and entirely satisfied with Jesus in the midst of my poverty and my pain. And you, yesterday, you and I were talking, and you're reading a book, which I'll get you to introduce in a second here. And he brings up this metaphor of the Ab King Jesus. And so I'd like you to just kind of give me a rundown and give our audience a rundown of what that was all about.
Oh, I better turn to that section. The book is called Astonished by Mike Eyre. And he talks about being enamored by infomercials. And the infomercial that he talks about is this thing called the Ab King. And the Ab King is this, you know, belt that you put on and it zaps your tummy. And, you know, within 6 weeks, you get this six pack and everything else. And of course, he orders it, and when he actually finds out what it actually does, it hurts. It doesn't do anything. But how often, he says, do we actually make Jesus that way? That Jesus becomes something of another consumer option. And when he says consumer option, the whole idea is that, you know, they're selling discontentment, basically saying, you know, your life bites, your life sucks, your life isn't fulfilling. But if you get this for $19.99, four installments and whatever you not, we can turn your life around. You can have those six packs you've always wanted. You can have that glamorous whatever it is. And we kind of sell Jesus that way in a lot of our Christian culture. You're unfulfilled and Jesus will come into your life and somehow change it all. But here's...
Well, I was just going to say this, and then I can just hear the voice right now. But wait, there's more. If you order now, we'll throw in the Holy Spirit. Like it's that kind of idea where we have turned Jesus into like the slap chop. That's the one I think of, or the sham wow. Like he is this...
the easy button.
He's an easy button. He's a product,
yes,
and a brand. Jesus is a brand, not necessarily a God.
And so this is the section that I think I read to you yesterday. Like... every other product that promises fulfillment, Jesus becomes another consumer option offered to us as a way of gaining fulfillment and satisfaction, except this time at a cosmic scale. The problem, obviously, is that this version of the gospel isn't really true. Jesus never made these promises. And how many of us still feel incomplete, inadequate, or unfulfilled even with Jesus? I've learned that Jesus is like the Ab King, full of promises, but he fails to deliver. We get this huge guarantee of how Jesus will complete us. Then we find out he's just like every other product we've tried. We may enjoy him for a season, but sooner or later he disappoints us, just like everything else. Unless Jesus isn't a consumer product. Unless this consumer gospel is not the real gospel, but only a free market translation of something that is, in fact, not biblical at all. Unless Jesus never really promised to remove our dissatisfaction, emptiness, and uncertainty. And then he goes on and says that, you know, if anything, God actually meets us in our brokenness, in those deep, dark places. That's where he meets us with his presence and calls us to lean on him and not ourselves. And he doesn't change those situations often than not.
And what I love about, I don't know if I love that paragraph, I think it's a very convicting paragraph, but it's this idea that Jesus is, no matter if we want to admit it or not, Jesus is a genie Jesus.
Yes.
Right? And I want you guys to remember that. Like, how many times do you bring up Jesus and you just expect him to be the genie Jesus, where you make your wishes, and when then you don't want Jesus, you just shove him back in the bottle. Right? And the thing is, Jesus didn't even promise you contentment. And in fact, when Paul says rejoice, and again I say rejoice, that's like an act of choice. He's saying, you guys got to choose this. You have to choose not to worry. When Jesus says, do not worry, he doesn't say, hey man, I'm just going to give this to you. I'm going to give you a life of peace. He says, no, you're going to have to actively choose this. You're going to have to trust in me. Because if we had full satisfaction, we wouldn't need faith.
And I think sometimes those passages that, you know, we throw out are taken out of context in such a huge way. Well, you said, you know, when Paul says, rejoice, and I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and things like that. Well, the dude's actually in prison when he writes that, right? He's not exactly sitting on a beach sipping a margarita and thinking, you know, this is the life. He's actually having been beaten and thrown to jail. He's hungry. Jail is not fun. It was probably way less fun than we ever know. Or like that passage from Jeremiah, which so many people love, you know, I know the plans for you, and you know, to prosper you, not to harm you, and blah, 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 blah. Well, that was spoken to a people who were in exile.
He's saying to them, I won't kill you.
Yeah, and
I'll do everything but I'm not going to kill you. I'll bring you back eventually.
Exactly, but you're going to go through exile. You're going to go through, like, you know, being deported refugees, and some of you might even become slaves and things like that.
And yet I'll love you through it.
I'll love you through it. That's crazy.
Before we wrap up, I want to talk about another Jesus. Because I think some of us are prone to the genie Jesus. And others of us, including myself, are prone to the activist Jesus.
Oh.
Or the agenda backer Jesus. Where we use Jesus as almost a weapon to back our agendas. And I'm not going to point fingers, because I think that no matter where you're coming from, I think that you can be prone to do this on various issues. And I've been going through C.S. Lewis's works on Mere Christianity right now. And just a little plug, you can go on Amazon and get all of C.S. Lewis's works for $1 for digitally. So it's kind of a cool thing. But as I was reading through this, I was really shocked by this one paragraph that he talks about, this idea of the agenda backing Jesus. So let me just read this. It's from Mere Christianity. And now, before I end, I'm going to venture on a guess as to how this section has affected any who have read it. My guess is that there are some leftist people among you who are very angry that I have not gone further in that direction. Of course, he's talking about the liberal mandate. And some people are on the opposite sort who are angry because I've not gone too far on the conservative side. If so, that brings us right up against the real snag in all of this drawing up of blueprints for a Christian society. Many of us are not really approaching the subject in order to find what Christianity says. We are approaching it in hope of finding support from Christianity for the views of our own party. And here it is. We are looking for an ally where we were offered either a master or a judge. What I like about that is Jesus, I think, we keep trying to put him in this box or pull him over to this side where we want him to be. And yet he doesn't move, and he's kind of like a giraffe. He pops his head up annoyingly out of our box, and we realize that he's so much more than we realize. And in some ways, he is so much more on the right side. In some ways, he's so much more on the left side, because he really transcends any of that. And that's human-made views of Christ. And I think that just with the sermon, what I was, again, we're just going back to that big idea just to push it through, is that you cannot unbless what God has blessed, and you cannot bless what he has not blessed. And we really need to, McLaurin, and Peter and I, of course, we have to seek the heart of God and not necessarily try and shape Jesus, but allow him to shape our heart and allow him to shape our direction and have him as the compass, as opposed to trying to pull Jesus to our compass.
I think that nails it. We're going to wrap up right there. Thank you for tuning in to Alrighty Then, the weekly bot podcast where we discuss and kind of go a little deeper into the sermon topics. If you have any questions, please email them to officembcgateway.ca, and we would love to hear from you. Blessings.